Hi, I'm Marian McPartland. Today on Piano Jazz, my guest is the acclaimed vibraphonist, pianist, and composer Gary Burton. Not only is he a marvelous player, he's also one of the most influential jazz educators around. Gary, it's great to see you.
It's great to be here, Marian, and great to see you again.
It's been a long time.
I know.
Since you were 17.
Well, even before that, actually, I went to a club in, of all places, Evansville, Indiana, near where I grew up, and you were playing there. And a local pianist who knew me said, you got to come down and hear Marian McPartland. So my parents brought me. So that was before I had a driver's license, so I must have been 15 or so.
Oh, my goodness.
And heard you play. And that was I didn't know who you were until then. So then I started getting your records and so on. And
really?
Yeah. And then I met you when I moved to New York a few years later. And
with Joe Morello.
That's right, because I knew Joe Morello, who was, of course, your former drummer and friend. And he introduced us again. And then you, I didn't even know if you remembered this or not, you were instrumental in getting me my first full-time job, which was with George Shearing.
I do remember that because I must have heard you play with Joe. Didn't he have a big band record?
That's right.
And you were in the band.
I was in the band.
He thought you were the greatest thing since the wheel, and you were. And so then I heard you, and George was looking. So I said, here's this wonderful young guy. And then you wrote something wonderful for George, like a whole album.
Yeah, He always loved contrapuntal music like Bach, and he was after me to. I had done some arranging of standards and things for him, but he said, "Write me something that uses counterpoint." So I just made up a little blues that sort of was Bach style and wrote it, and he loved it and said, "Okay, do a bunch of these, and we'll do a whole record of them." So that was the most writing I'd ever done up to that point. But over the next few months, we rehearsed all these pieces and went into a studio and recorded them. It was really one of the first large recording projects I'd ever done, and he was the inspiration.
You were what, about 19?
I was 19, exactly.
Oh, my goodness. And you, I remember exactly how you looked with the white collar. You looked like a schoolboy, which you almost were.
Yeah, that's true. When I see pictures from those days, I can't believe how conservative
wonderful.
I look.
They were with George. What a kick. Boy, so many things to talk about. But first, I'd love to hear you play something. It's been too long.
Thank you.
What have you got, piano or vibes?
Well, I'll play the vibes. This is a piece that I learned from Stan Getz. After I left George's band, I moved on and played for several years with Stan Getz, and it was during his bossa nova years. And this was one of Antonio Carlos Jobim's compositions. It's called O Grande Amor.
Oh, that's a great tune. Love that. After you were with George, what happened then?
Well, I would have stayed longer with George. I just played with him for 1 year, but he decided to break up the band for a while and stay home and do a radio show, which in Los Angeles, which he did for about a year before he resumed touring again. So I found myself back in New York, unemployed all of a sudden, and before I could even get my first unemployment check, the phone rang, and it was Stan Getz asking me if I would be interested in playing. He was actually looking for a pianist, but hadn't found one. And Lou Levy, who at the time was Peggy Lee's pianist and an old friend of Stan's, had told him about me and said, well, there's this vibes player who plays with four mallets who might be able to substitute for a piano. And it was a complete disaster. I didn't know their tunes or their arrangements. And he said, okay, well, thanks anyway. It didn't seem to work. But 3 days later, he called again and said, you know, I'm desperate. Will you come and work at least?
Well, but you played such good piano, too.
Well, I, you know, not good enough for him, I don't think. He was a very particular player. But he said, come and play 3 weeks in Canada with us. And then that'll give me a chance to find someone else. And I said, well, you know, I liked the other two guys in the band were friends of mine, and I thought, well, it'll be fun, something to do, and I'm not employed, so I might as well do it. And went to Canada, and the first week we didn't seem to find much rapport, but by week two it was starting to come together, and by the third week it was settled into a pretty nice sound, and he was happy with it, and so was I. So I ended up staying for 3 years.
That's a nice story.
Well, I learned, you know, I often say this about both George Shearing and Stan, that from George I learned about harmony and about timing, how to pace the music. He played wonderful solo pieces, which were an inspiration for me to play solo pieces too. From Stan, I learned about melody. The first thing I noticed playing with Stan was how powerful he could be with the listeners. I mean, sometimes we would play a ballad and he wouldn't even solo. He'd play the melody, let me solo, and then he'd play the melody out, and he would dominate the piece. So he totally changed my outlook on what my role as the improviser was and how to communicate with the audience.
Speaking of which, I see you've picked a wonderful tune. And dying to hear you play it. Blame It on My Youth.
Yeah, I learned this from George, actually, who used to play it occasionally and always admired it. And then this is by Oscar Levant, one of his, as Oscar said, his one attempt at writing a hit song. And it sort of has become a hit.
It has, in a
very quiet way, because it's still around and people still play it. It has great lyrics as well. But I love playing it as a solo
piece. Very romantic. Mm-hmm. Well, can't wait. Should do a duet.
Yes, absolutely.
What have you?
Well, how about Yesterday's? It's an old Jerome Kern classic.
It's a tune, and I love to play the tune, but something about a minor tune that they always seem to feel good. And
uh-huh.
So I love this tune, and let's have at it and see what we can do. Thank you. Well, we should play a Duke tune, shouldn't we?
I'd love to. I think the song we're going to do is one of his more interesting compositions. It's called Sophisticated Lady, and a lot of people know it, but as a composition, it's really pretty sophisticated.
There
are
it
these,
is.
These descending chromatic progressions and key changes and so on. This was a very creative piece of work for its time, and musicians have continued to love it to this day because it's such a different kind of construction from most of the standard songs that we have around.
Yeah, and when you get to the bridge, you have to be careful not to fall off.
That's right. That's a good way of putting it. Well, let's give it a go.
Okay, let's do that.
That was a lot of fun. It's always great to play duets.
It is, and you sure have played a lot of duets in your time. All your life, it seems.
Well, I spend most of my time these days playing with two piano players, sometimes Chick Corea, sometimes Makoto Ozone. And actually, I feel like when I play the vibraphone with a pianist, that it really feels to me like it's two pianos, because my instrument, when you look at it, it looks like the piano keyboard.
It does.
And I think like a piano player. And I've always thought that was why I haven't had an easy rapport with both Chick and Makoto, because I think our thought processes are very similar.
Must be, because you turn out such terrific music all the time.
And it's been a combination that's worked for a long time. Chick and I have been playing together for over 30 years, and I've been playing with Makoto for 20 years now. And they're each very different types of players. So, people sometimes ask me, what's the difference? Or do you like one better than the other? And I have to say they're so different that for me, I have a completely different experience with each one, and love playing with both of them equally, and look forward to every gig that we have together.
Well, whatever it is, I mean, you've turned out such marvelous music, and lately with the classical thing that you've done with Makoto.
Well, that was an experiment that paid off, so to speak.
An experiment, boy.
We got the idea because Makoto, we were trying to think what to do for the next record, and we were having lunch before a gig in Arizona, I think it was. And Makoto had just come back from Japan, where he had done some concerts with some orchestras. So he was talking about this Mozart piece and other things he'd been playing. And that got us talking about classical music and classical piano music in particular. And then it just hit me, maybe we should try to do something with this. So we decided we'd prepare just a few pieces first, because this was going to take a lot more work than playing a few standards. We're going to have to learn these pieces and then rearrange them so we could improvise on them. So we picked a piece by Ravel, a piece by Scarlatti, and I think one other in the first go around, just to see if we could pull this off. And we liked it so much that we then went to work and learned, six or eight more pieces so we could make a whole record of them.
Well, see, now what you're going to do is, by contrast, I mean, it's pretty easy.
Well, I'm going to play another vibraphone solo on a favorite standard of mine, and it's called My Romance.
Oh, that's a great tune. To hear the full Piano Jazz broadcast, tune in next week to your NPR station. Log on to pianojazz.npr.org to find a station in your area. Piano Jazz is a production of South Carolina ETV and Radio. Support for Piano Jazz comes from the National Endowment for the Arts, the Friends of Piano Jazz at NPR.